Hello, and welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I am John Ash. This week, we're going to talk about our top 10 tips for developers. So kind of going through this, we didn't put these in any particular order, but what do we have first on the list?
So first on our list is learn some form of source control. We've got Git in parentheses. Git's fairly popular these days, and it seems like most teams are using some flavor of Git, GitHub, GitLab, Git in Azure DevOps. It really seems like if we're working in an environment with, even by ourselves, but usually in a small team or even a larger team, we're going to want to keep our source in some sort of source management.
Yeah, and I think along with this, I think Git is a pretty strong recommendation. Most people probably should be learning Git. It doesn't mean you have to like learn the commands, so to speak. You don't have to be a command line expert on it. But what I think is most important, you need to understand how it's working enough to like sort of understand how it's going to, you know, how to leverage the tool. You don't have to know all the ins and outs of it, but you do need to be able to say, okay, how is this? How can we leverage that source control? Have some sort of, whether the commands or maybe it might be something like source tree or git kraken or some other GUI that will help you sort of manage those things. But I think the last thing about source control is also understand sort of where the drawbacks are of what sort of source control methodology that you're using. So how do we, are we doing something like trunk based in the way that we're feature branches and that sort of thing? Are we doing, you know, things that are more like Git flow, or we have environments per branch, and kind of understand what some of the nuances of those things are. I think that would be sort of a stretch goal in that area.
Yeah, I would say that there's plenty out there to get your feet wet knowledge-wise in the Git realm. So just getting the basics under control about how to create a branch, how to create a pull request in your given environment, what kind of merge procedures you might employ, what to do if you encounter some kind of merge conflict. There's all kinds of branching and merging strategies out there, like Ash, you mentioned, Git flow and things like that you can dive off the deep end pretty quickly. But as long as you have a basic understanding, if you're working in a team with developers, skilled developers, and they have their own preferred methodologies, then as long as you have the basics under your belt, then you should be able to fold right into a team pretty easily.
Yep, I would agree with that. So another thing that we have here is, I think, learn a scripting language. And I mean, for us as a predominant C# developer, I think PowerShell would be a perfect example. But with, you know, the prevalence of .NET Core running in Docker, running in Linux, Bash is definitely a great option as well. In fact, some of the, I think, like Azure CLI stuff was more Bash friendly before there was more PowerShell friendly. But I think that this maybe is somewhat of a weird top 10 tip, because I don't know that this was really as necessary, say 3 to 4, maybe 10 years ago or something like that. But I think the development, we're bringing so much of the environment so close to the developer these days that you're going to need to be able to kind of know how to work and automate things in an environment as a developer.
Yeah, more and more of my daily work is in Azure these days. And when I'm trying to discover something and add something to my repertoire that I don't have knowledge and experience in, I'm going to the Microsoft Docs page and looking for things on Azure Functions or something with Azure AD. And all of the examples out there, or a large majority of the examples out there, are showing examples in PowerShell, and they don't yet have the GUI available in the portal.
Yep.
So next on our list, we have learn someone else's job.
Yeah, so learn. I think what it really means is, you know, it's easy to be caught up in the development and just writing code, and code is all you need to do. But especially if you're talking about this, I think this is easier, and what agile teams are really there to try to help kind of de-silo some of the elements. But as a developer, it's important to understand how is QAing your work, and also to understand kind of their perspective in the way that they're looking at edge cases, and they're looking at how does this work break. I mean, too often as a developer, we will get thinking about the happy path, and we'll make sure that, hey, this works for our condition that the only thing we thought of. But you know, when you sort of learn how the other people, the BAs, how are they getting requirements, where are those requirements coming from, who's driving that, and that helps you ask better questions, maybe get them to get you better feedback, and you know, learn what the other elements of the software development process those people are doing, and what their job is, so that you can help better facilitate. And I think what this does is it makes you a much more well-rounded developer, and you'll write better code for it.
Having just celebrated a milestone birthday, I've been doing this a long time. Having worked in purely waterfall companies and working on waterfall projects with very strong walled silos between the various departments, whether it's BA, QA, project manager, DBAs, it was very common to just throw things over the wall, and it was not a fun time to be a software developer, because I want to see that we're delivering value to the end client, the customer, the user. And it's very difficult to get that right without everybody working collaboratively together. So I'm much more happy these days that everyone seems to be working towards the same goal and working toward the same end to deliver that same value. And we are more open and understanding and working together as a team.
Yeah, it does seem to go well. And when it's not, you just have to throw it over the wall, and there's these giant walls in between everyone. And I really do feel like that's sort of what Agile, if it's what Agile is trying to accomplish when they bring, and we have these cross-domain teams. Unfortunately, I still see a lot of even companies that are trying to do Agile, they still group their people by developers and BA and QA, and it does sadden me a little bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of that out there, that we do Agile because we say we do Agile without really understanding the goals that we're trying to strive for, that we're trying to break down those walls. We're trying to deliver faster, better, all towards that same goal.
So kind of thinking about, you know, one of the thing we have next on our list, how do you think from the user's perspective? So when you're doing your development, you know, what does that mean to you, John?
So thinking from the user's perspective, it's more of a, you know, I'm not reading just a specification document and implementing something because the document says so. I'm not looking at a bulleted list that I created all these touch points and I checked all the boxes. I want to make sure that we're actually thinking about how the users are going to use the software, making sure that they're not going to encounter any pain points, that it is doing the things that they actually want it to do. Maybe they asked for checkboxes in a row on this thing with a green background and that whatever. But if that's not what they really need, it's trying to uncover what the intent of the original ask is, and then working to make sure that we're delivering a valuable, easy to use, easy to understand set of functionality to them. And often that includes roping them into these conversations. If you're working on an internal back office application, then maybe you have the ability to work closely to the ultimate end users. If it's a commercial product, maybe it's bringing in a focus group.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times there's weird situations where, you know, maybe the user, the requirements are coming very directly from users, and users are saying, but users don't always know what's possible, or they don't always know what would work well for them. And so because of that, they come up with something that is close to, they come up with a solution that is, you know, that makes sense to them, but it really, there's something better out there. And the other option is, I think you have, and this is probably more common, the user isn't the one who's the product owner. The product owner is the one who's paying for it, and the business that's doing something. And they're the ones saying, okay, well, we think this is what users are going to want. We think this is, and so they're sort of defying the things. And they also don't know necessarily what is great, or what kind of possibilities there are to be developed, and are bringing their own sides into it. And I too often I see developers just, you know, like you said, following that bulleted list and doing exactly what the doing exactly the requirement that has been spelled out. And then when it's all said and done, what would work better is if someone had taken the time to think, hey, what would actually work best for the user. And so just like learning someone else's job, thinking from the user's perspective is one of those things that help you round out your development ability.
Yeah. I used to keep in the back of my mind that if it were my parents that were using this software, could they figure it out? Would they encounter any problems? Would they call me from 1,000 miles away trying to troubleshoot over the phone? So, you know, looking for any pain points and trying to take that away from potential users so that they enjoy using your product.
So the next one we have here is learning cross-technology practices. And really what this means to me is, you know, learning the things like development patterns, architectural patterns, disciplines like test-driven development. So doing all these things that can be lifted and utilized in one technology, but then translate, maybe there's some slightly different syntax changes as we mostly get in different technologies, but the ideas and concepts of them are something you can take with you as the technology changes. And it's great because it's an investment you can make once, but it really does pay dividends over and over again, no matter how fast and how many JavaScript frameworks pop up.
Yeah, and along those lines, we start to uncover the development patterns, the architectural patterns, and start to equate them to functionality and pieces of the software. And we can start to maybe not pick up the Gang of Four book, because that is a very thick, deep, dark, heavy read. But at least be aware that there are development patterns, architectural patterns out there, and maybe look into picking up the Refactoring to Patterns book, or the Head First Design Patterns book, the Java version, because that's a much lighter, easier read.
One of the areas that in development that we find ourselves having to do a ton of is estimates. So you have a philosophy in estimates. What's your tip here?
Yeah, there's the longstanding under-promise and over-deliver. It's quite clear to anyone that's been in software that estimates are really difficult. It's very difficult to get an accurate estimate. And then once you give an estimate, that somehow becomes a contract that you must hit. What we want to do is get a better understanding of what the ask is, get some kind of metrics around that. If it's similar to a feature that we've delivered before and that took 3 days, if we're trying to account for and make people happy that are better in dealing with day estimates, then maybe we're looking into that. I've worked on teams where for a particular project or for a particular feature, I would give an estimate of a day because that was what the unit of measure we were working in. Whereas one of my coworkers would also give a day estimate on a similarly sized feature. What we found out is the person accepting those estimates would take my day and round it down to 3 hours, and take my coworker's day and round it up to 3 days, because he knew historically that was our units of measure, that I would account for all of the possible unknowns. And realistically, it's going to be somewhere between an hour and a day, or 3 days and 5 days. And give it that range. But if someone's not willing to, or doesn't want to hear the range, just end up giving the upper estimate, the upper bounds of that estimate. For my coworker, he was often giving the optimistic answer. So he would not look at the possibilities of something going wrong or any of the undiscovered requirements, and give the lower bounds of that estimate.
I think one sort of piece that I'll tack onto there, I feel like it's something that we don't do very often, but when we don't know, say we don't know. A lot of times this will not be an acceptable answer, but it is the correct answer. And someone will eventually press us to continue to say, okay, no, we have to have an estimate. But go ahead and make that first estimate be the correct one that says, I don't know what that is, but if you're going to make me guess, here's where I think it is. And it too often, I've also, like, kind of what you were talking about, I've seen young junior developers who don't have a whole lot of experience and are ambitious and want to sort of please people, want to, you know, someone comes in and says, hey, can you get this done in this amount of time? And they're like, absolutely. Or can you get this done? I'll have this done in, you know, how long will it take you? Half a day, three, you know, slow down and sort of give your time, give your space, give yourself time to make sure that you do the complete job. And it's a lot easier to come up and deliver a lot faster than you originally predicted than trying to people be equally impressed with you when you can deliver to them in a faster response than they were expecting, as opposed to 3 days later after you said you are going to have it to them, handing that feature to them and saying, here you go. It just ballooned into something bigger than I was expecting.
I'm sure we've all worked in an environment where we go around the room, we come up with estimates on a particular feature and say, okay, this is going to take 2 weeks. And then a business owner or someone higher up comes back and says, no, we have to have it in 2 days. Don't back down on that estimate. Say if the arbitrary deadline is, or if the real deadline is 2 days, then we need to pare down this feature. We cannot realistically deliver what you're asking for in that amount of time. So we want to do the right thing. We want to be professionals, and we want to say this can't be done reliably, cleanly, and relatively bug-free. This can only happen on a longer timeline, or we have to pare down the ask.
And if you do pare down the ask and you find that you've accomplished that within the amount of time that you have, and there's still additional time, you can always bring those other features or other features back in and build that feature up. But it's a tough place to be, and I think it's something that many developers struggle in this arena.
And next on our list is something you actually mentioned, was slow down, stop immediately throwing code into an editor and just to see what sticks. Understand the problem. Understand what the ask is. Understand what the deadline is. Understand what the constraints are. Understand what the users expect and what the user experience is going to be. Take all those things into account and then bite off small little chunks. Deliver them cleanly, quickly, iterate over them, but don't bite off huge, massive chunks and start throwing code into an editor. Because as soon as you start writing code, that's as soon as the bugs start happening. Slow down. Get a better understanding. Hopefully you can avoid some potential pain that you are going to self-inflict.
Yeah, actually, I mean, a lot of the things that we've been talking about, learning someone else's job, learning the user's perspective, understanding development practices and patterns, making sure that you account for all the unknowns in the problem solving process, all of those things are really highly related to this one of slowing down. And it really is a matter of making sure that you think through the process. I think it's interesting. There's the DevOps movement, which is so focused on the idea of going fast Right. But one of the critical things you said there was bite off smaller chunks. And that's the only way. It's ironic because when we say slow down, we don't actually mean you necessarily have to become less proficient at your actual amount of time that you'll deliver features or good features. You know, you'll be able to deliver value more quickly and effectively because it won't be filled with bugs. It will be the right thing at the right time, delivered completely, as opposed to a bunch of crap that's shoved at you right away that we have to then hack together to fix. If you just simply just put the pedal to the metal and start, you know, burning your keyboard, just because it can take 10 million strokes before it breaks doesn't mean we have to actually get those 10 million strokes in. And one of the things I always talk about is if the speed of which you type can put code in was such a critical factor to development, we'd have typing in every single job interview. It's just not. Putting the right code down and making sure that it's meeting the feature and fulfilling the whole software request there. That's what's most important.
Particularly since you're doing a lot more DevOps these days, that kind of plays into some of this. Slow down and do the preliminary work first. Set up your delivery pipelines. Set up your source control. Discuss and define your development practices, your merging and branching strategies. Work through those things so that you don't find yourself a year or two into a project where everyone is going a million miles an hour in multiple different directions. How many times have you jumped onto a project only to find out that Dave has the latest source to that feature on his machine over there, and Barbara has the billing module on her machine? We can't actually deploy them any kind of automated fashion. Everyone has to remote in or VPN or whatever the case may be, right click and deploy into whatever environment and just hope and pray that it all works together.
Yep. Along the lines of slowing down, another one that's very simpler is just simplify. I think there's a lot of tendencies for people to want to look clever and want to be clever. Don't be clever. Be as straightforward. This is about writing something that is well articulated as opposed to writing some artistic prose, right? You want people to understand what you're saying and write it in a way that you will be able to understand what you were saying, because you can definitely be too clever for your own good.
I think there was a discussion on Twitter the other night, something along the lines of reading code is actually more difficult than writing code. So if you write code being clever to the upper edge of your ability, you're no longer qualified to even read the code you wrote. I know I've been one to come in a day, a week, a month later into my own code, not recognize it, not understand it, and have to spend some time reacquainting myself with the code and only to figure out what it was that I was trying to do. When I stumble across those things, I make it a point to refactor and make it simpler, make it easier to understand, because I want everyone, especially me coming back into it, to be able to quickly and easily understand that, so that if we do encounter a bug or an enhancement request, that we can easily get in there, do our job, move on to the next thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, along this lines, make sure you fix the names. I mean, if the name of a variable changes, please, please rename it.
And if that function or method is no longer in use, if it's no longer needed, don't comment it out, just delete it. We've got source control. That was the number one bullet. I know we said they weren't in any order, but that's a number one. Make sure you have source control.
Yep.
Which brings us to always be learning. There was a book years ago, Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. This is not the case in modern software development. Many of the patterns have been around longer than many of us have been alive, and we're rediscovering them and still learning them and still implementing them in new and different languages and frameworks and libraries. With that, there are new languages, frameworks, and libraries. There are new environments. The cloud wasn't a thing when I started in software development. There's always something new to be learning.
Yeah. And I think sort of in conjunction with this, always, you know, being learning, you need to learn how to learn, and you can't learn everything, right? So you want to understand, you want to be able to have that process of continuously pulling in new information and new ideas, so that you can reach out and pick up the things that are important to you in any given moment, because you things are changing. There's such a breadth of knowledge as well. There's such a breadth and depth in certain areas, right? So that no one person can really understand the gamut. And while it's great to become an expert in a single area, it's definitely there's a lot of value there. And if you can do that, by all means, do that. But a lot of times I find that you have to be able to be flexible to flow with where the industry is headed. And you're just going to be able to, you want to have that skill to be able to pick up information, to know that it existed, and now dig in and get deep on a particular subject. Because while you didn't need to know really a lot of depth about some framework or some pattern yesterday, today you do. And you want to be able to kind of freely do that.
And as you're speaking about that, I'm thinking to myself and wanting to convey, be nice and be understanding to yourself and to others, and know and acknowledge that we are all always learning. No one has it all figured out. We're all in this together. We're all doing our best. That includes yourself. So don't be hard on yourself. Don't be hard on others. Continue to do better today than you did yesterday. Come in tomorrow and try to do better again.
Yeah, and that kind of brings us to the last piece on our list, which is to work on those human skills. The note that we have here is they're not soft skills, right? Soft sort of implies that there's something that comes naturally and easy. These are difficult things for us. They're hard, but they're really, 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 really important. And I would say one of the most important pieces, because as we collaborate, as we, you know, work together, they're the things that are going to get you through the day. They're going to be able to help you learn those jobs that other people are doing. They're going to be able to help you find out, hey, what's the right perspective to take here? Learning empathy, learning being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes, learning how to take on someone else's perspective, communication, all of these things. These are immensely important, and probably some of the most valuable skills that you could possibly work. And everyone has to work on them. Everyone, it's just like the learning, you know, no one really has a handle on what everyone's human experience is like.
When I started in the software development industry, I was a developer that they threw pizza and Mountain Dew at, and I developed whatever a specification document said and shipped out code. These days, I'm in meetings, I'm in the room with C-level executives, I'm in the room with public clients, I'm speaking with end users, I'm working closely with QAs and BAs, we're all working towards the same goal. So it just makes it that much easier if we can all learn to speak intelligently and communicate effectively with one another. And of course, dear listener, we want to hear from you. What are your top tips for developers?
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I am John Ash.